Welcome to Talking in Stations, a podcast about EVE Online. I'm Matterall, and with me today is Carneros.
Good morning, everyone.
And Elise Randolph.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. So it's the three of us. We might have a guest drop in later on today by the name of Seth Shadow. He is from Scourge, if that's where he's still from. But he's in the middle of a fleet right now, so we'll try to get him a little bit later. Right now, I think it's got to be the three of us, and I can think of no one better than you two to talk about EVE Online with. Sorry, everyone else.
Thank you.
These guys know a ton from many different directions, so I've kind of been looking forward to having kind of a more insular group, and here's our opportunity to do it for a while. So what do we want to talk about? Let's look on our list here. The first thing is probably the biggest news, and it seems to have after effects, is the Alliance tournament is going on a hiatus. It's said to be a one-year hiatus. You're someone that knows a lot about it, Elise. Can you tell us a little bit of the background of this?
So for the last 2 or 3 years, the Alliance tournament has kind of been trying to find its place of ownership, I guess, within CCP. So last year, they basically outsourced the production of it to EVE NT, who had been running the beginning of the feeder rounds for the Alliance tournament for the previous 2 or 3 years and had run their own tournament. And so they did the production with EVE NT, but it looks like this year, and according to our chat with CCP Falcon that we had as soon as the news came out on this channel, it seemed like they couldn't really find a good ownership for the Alliance tournament this year. No one to really give it the resources that it needs in terms of dev time and, you know, just even GM time and stuff like that. And even like the right resources in terms of servers and things like that. So instead of kind of half-assing it this year, they decided to put it on a hiatus for next year, where they can then rebuild it, revisit what makes it successful. And you, myself, and Falcon had some interesting chats about what made the Alliance tournament successful in previous years and what made it less successful going forward. And one of the things that I kind of stuck on, and it seemed to be an accurate, you know, description of it, is the interaction between the players and the you know, the event itself. It used to be through EVEbet and other internal betting sites. And as soon as that went away, like a lot of the interest in the EVE Online Alliance tournament from the player's perspective or from the viewer's perspective started to like slowly dwindle, right? So it's kind of a bummer that that's what started it. And a lot of people did mention as soon as EVEbet went away that a lot of the community events would suffer a bit. But it seems like the CCP people know exactly what's lacking in the Alliance tournament, and they know what they need and what it's worth. That's the most important part, because a lot of the rage and sadness, and, you know, the sadness is super justified by these Alliance tournament pilots. A lot of it comes down to they believed that maybe this was the end of the Alliance tournament forever, that CCP viewed it the wrong way, and, you know, all this stuff. Yeah, I mean, some of the AT guys are a little bit passionate, you know, they come back around this time every year to start practicing for it. And, you know, kudos to CCP for announcing it earlier than they really needed to. And especially, I'm glad they announced it before the CSM summit. Can you imagine, like, right after the CSM summit, the news come out, oh, by the way, the AT is canceled. Now all these people will be going to be blaming the CSM for the AT being canceled.
Yeah, that would have been funny for us, not for them. Let me quickly introduce Seth, who's joined us. How are you doing, Seth Shadu?
Yeah, hello.
Hey, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me again.
Yeah, of course. We're talking about the Alliance tournament and CCP's recent announcement that there won't be one this year.
I worked at CCP, I helped a little bit with the Alliance tournament stuff, or I happened to just live nearby. So I would come over and help and just hang out with the guys, sometimes buy them dinner. So, you know, sometimes just watch behind the scenes. It was weeks and weeks of work by volunteers outside their regular job to set it up each time. It was the people, they would have to pull the set out, refinish it, repair it, get it all back and work in order. They would have to pull the AT build of the client. Most people know that there are multiple versions of the EVE client, and one of them is the Alliance Tournament client. And they would sometimes that would lag behind in getting updated, and there would be work associated with that. And then you have to set up all these equipment and jury-rig the network to go across the street if they were using the space across the street sometimes. And it's just tons of effort and very little, a lot of times it was very little support from the company itself to do this. They weren't allowed to take time off from their main job. They didn't get any perks for doing this. And the art team didn't mind making the design team didn't mind making a ship or two as prizes, but they had to be in the schedule, and CCP would, have to approve that. It's a lot more work that goes into putting on the tournament than it looks like, even before the first broadcast starts.
Yeah, and you actually make a really good point, and that's something I wanted to dwell on. There wasn't like a lot of buy-in internally, at least from what it seemed to me, as I was like an outsider, but kind of an insider because I got to go over there to be part of the Alliance tournament. And it seemed like all of the tools and all of the really cool stuff that we had for the Alliance tournament that made it better starting around like Alliance tournament 10 and 11, that really upped the quality. That was all done from people volunteering their time, right? And making these cool tools, making these new tracking cameras, making all these fancy graphics for the tournament itself.
I was really surprised talking to CCP Falcon the other day, and you can catch that recording on our YouTube, or we've put it out as a podcast as well. You can catch it on talkinginstations.com. What surprised me about that conversation was just how, but the Alliance tournament used to happen twice a year, not once a year, and those were very entertaining sessions, back then, as far as I'm concerned. So they were great productions, and they were just thrown together and somehow came together with like just whatever they could find when they were doing it. And there was, he told that story about the pigeon, which was hilarious, right? Like, wasn't there a, was that, am I confusing things, or wasn't there a pigeon that got in the way of the signal, which,
Or sometimes Iceland's always windy. It's usually windy. And sometimes even the wind would be a problem. But there used to be a building just across the street from the CCP building that was a high-tech.com incubator back when those were chic. And it was full of had little startups, and it had a big space in the middle that was kind of empty-ish. And we could take over that space for a small fee. And things like that you can do in Iceland. And they would have to jury-rig the network from CCP across to that building, because what that building came wired with for the dot-com startups would make you sad. So they would use the better CCP network. And it was crazy.
So, but they do that with an infrared beam, right? Because we used to do that we have two companies, or if you have, I know around that time we had our company in two different buildings, and they were like, five stories up. So they would actually shoot an infrared beam from one building to the other to connect the internet through like a laser beam, basically. And I think Falcon was saying that a pigeon got in the way of that beam and broke their connection, which was just like, is that how you're putting together an Alliance tournament? Because these things were incredibly entertaining, and maybe a lot of the energy of scrapping it together was like going into the production.
My very first Alliance tournament where I got to commentate while in Iceland, I think it was Alliance tournament 12, the studio was literally just someone's office, and they removed a wall. It was like a movable wall, so it was like modular, but they removed the wall to put in the camera so we could do the filming. But the way it worked was, like, once you did that, you couldn't really move around in the set, because the set was the size of an office. It was really an office, like it's not like an entire office building, just like a singular office room. So you couldn't really move once you got in there, and the lights were like incredibly high to get the better picture. And so you just had to sit there and sweat under the lights. And for breaks, I'd have to move the camera out of the way so you could then walk out the door. And anytime they had to move like any of the personnel or anything like that, the camera would have to literally move out of the way so you could walk back and forth. It was fantastic. And then they got an actual studio where it was much more normal.
Well, I think if you look at those old Alliance tournaments, you can see that a lot of smiling while they're looking at the camera. And I couldn't help but think like they're seeing something that's hilarious, but they can't lose it or share it with the audience. So they're probably hiding a lot of stuff. But anyway, so this is the first time, even after all those trials and all the difficulty of putting on the Alliance tournament, again, not once, but twice a year, this is the first time it's going on hiatus, and it's a big deal to a certain sector of players. So what's that reaction been like?
I mean, it's been super negative, right? So a lot of people say like, oh, this is the death of the Alliance tournament. But really, it's kind of a bigger issue than that, right? Because it's... the optics of it are, and I hate to use that word, but it does feel for a lot of these players who are really into PvP, small, medium scale PvP. They don't do the blob warfare. They don't do anything like that. They just fly around with between 3 and like 15 dudes and they have a good time. And they've been feeling for the last 2 or 3 years that the game is like moving away from them, right? They feel like the game is being balanced away from what their play style used to be. And they've been attacked for the last patches for 3, even 4 years. And now this is just like the cherry right on top. They're like, fine, you've patched away all my stuff. You've given me some of these Triglavian ships in return. So that's fun. But now you're taking away my prize. So I'm taking this as like an attack on my play style. And, you know, that's where a lot of these reactions come from.
Yep. Nothing is in a vacuum, so it doesn't get evaluated on the basis of the decision itself. It gets layered onto everything else. And it comes at a time when confidence in the status of the game and the direction going forward is down. Little might not be a good word. It's down right now. So that gets compounded on everything else, and people have a combination of a intellectual and an emotional reaction to it.
Well, I'm looking at a message from Purple Fleet guys or NPSI fleets, and I've heard, I don't know if I can say his name, so I won't, but he says, yeah, we've lost 3 high or experienced FCs. Over this, or at least as a part of that. I think we have a graphic to put that up. But yeah, so he lists off like 3 FCs who are basically taken off. I don't know what that means. And there's another guy that publicly self-destructed or extracted SP on Reddit or something. He put a video up on Reddit. Like, what are these symbols? What are these symbols meant to be? Are these like burning of the bras kind of thing?
Yeah,
I don't know how many of our people remember back to the 70s.
The 60s, 70s is a women's movement. And they were like, hey, we're going to burn these things. And it was a way of saying, like, I'm not with this program. I think I inadvertently threw a little shade. So I apologize, but go ahead.
It's kind of like, I think it's a lot like shooting the Jita Monument, but you don't have that many people because the AT only affects a small group of people. And so instead of attacking the monument, they can do this.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's basically they're registering dissatisfaction with, it's not just the tournament, is it? Like you were saying, Elise, it's more than the tournament. It's
yeah, I mean, direction. That's the way that people are definitely feeling, especially people that like the medium or small scale type things. Ever since, even going back all the way over to the Phoebe jump changes, that's when I think a lot of the small to medium groups, or at least I should say the medium groups, started to feel like infringed upon a little bit. So you saw groups like Black Legion and the Culture in NullSec. They obviously not huge tournament veterans, but that play style started closing up shop and groups started to coalesce quite a bit. And I've been talking to a lot of these guys over the years, and this is also kind of the reason why earlier or later last year, Chesser quit as well. And people like Tresor because they're like, well, this game's changing. I have a feeling about that. I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's changing away from what I used to like and what I used to do. And so I think the reason that this became such a big issue for the people is because it does seem to represent an even bigger push away from the gameplay style that a lot of these people were very fond of. And, you know, you looking back for your best times in Eve, for a lot of these people, myself included, some of the most fun I've ever had is with 20 or 30 other people. It's not in these BTAC-R type fights. It's with these small, medium-cell fights where I feel like my personal piloting helped swing the tide of battle.
Well, what can we say about the backlash to that opinion that we're seeing as well, where people are saying, look, the Alliance tournament really only serves a few people. It's been getting smaller and smaller. The people who really care about the tournament, like, is it, I wonder if it's, if there's some way that we're not looking at it yet, like is there anything to that, that this is just a small group? Why should CCP spend a lot of time doing it?
I mean, I think that's completely bullshit, right? Like, I think it's definitely a project that CCP should always be on. And I can see why people who aren't with the Alliance Tournament or who have no interaction with the Alliance Tournament or have started playing in the last 3 or 4 years, I can see how they don't care, right? But it represents history. It represents like the best parts, the most quintessential parts of EVE Online. And the people that are really into it are super into it. I was sharing this story. Basically, every time I was on the CSM and every time I did the Alliance tournament, people would ask me what I think about it and all this jazz. And there are some interesting stories that pop out, like Gobbins, who had quit EVE Online, came back for the Alliance tournament 1 year because he wanted to win. It was like the monkey off his back. He always enjoyed the theory crafting part of it. And so he continued playing after the Alliance tournament. We had won. And he was like on a high. He was like goofing around until the ships came out. And then we were fighting Brave. And he was like, he came to me with an idea. He was like, hey, I've got an idea for a new player group. We can call it, we were tossing around ideas and it came up with Pandemic Horde. And so you're coming up with a player group that ranks with 20,000 pilots. Obviously, a lot of them are alpha and not all of them are subbed. We're talking about 20,000 EVE Online pilots in one group. And that the reason that group existed is essentially the Alliance tournament. Without the Alliance tournament, those players, they maybe still exist in the game, but they're not all united under one banner. And so the Alliance tournament is really, it's an event for content enablers and content creators and people who do things for everyone else. So it's hugely, hugely important. And like one of the big knocks that people were talking about, they're like, oh, well, CCP don't know what this is. I can assure you they know exactly what it is because I have not shut up about it every time I've done the Alliance tournament for the last few years. And even when you look at the people who put on the tournament last year, EVNT, I was part of that group, you're talking about 30 or 40 people that put in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours to make that production look as good as it did. And these people were all volunteers. So it's an amazing, amazing, just this huge contribution from the community because they're so passionate about this one project.
Carneros, I think you wanted to say something, and then we'll go to Seth and bring him in.
Yeah, it's not just the people who participate who really appreciate the Alliance tournament. There are viewers who are excited to just watch it every year also. In San Diego, California, our local meetup group has a party every year. I have been hosting an AT party most years for the last, I don't know, 5, 6. And, you know, we would take over a bar somewhere, get them to open up at 8 o'clock in the morning so that we could all pile in and watch the AT on their screens. It's a lot of fun. None of us have Elise's personal piloting skills to actually contribute on a team like that. But we can still drink a beer and enjoy it and watch it. We're going to miss that this year, but, you know, I'm going to throw a party when it comes back.
Yeah, I think also that AT was a part of the EVE Online community, and everyone just can enjoy it a lot. Just with watch it with friends or take a part. It will be a huge loss for everyone, I'm sure.
Yeah. And again, this is just 1 year as they refigure it. Do you think it'll come back, at least, do you think it'll come back in a different form? Not just rules changes, but like it, like how much do you think they'll change it?
I'm not sure about how much they're going to change it. I think they're going to keep the core principles of it intact, but I think they're going to give it a much needed overhaul, as well as making sure, if I had a dream, it would be that they come up with some sort of rule set that makes it a little bit more Eve-like, but not too much like Eve. Like, I don't want it to be like, oh, I could bring 30 people, you can bring two, who cares? Like that type of thing. But, you know, I want to keep if I could design a dream tournament, it would be very Eve-like. It would have a means of interacting, even if the prizes are just some dumb prizes or some skins or something like that. And, you know, it would have a good amount of resources devoted to practicing, right? Because that's what has made the AT jump in terms of quality. Before Alliance Tournaments, before Alliance Tournament 11, there were basically three teams that were good, 10 teams that were average, and 20 to 50 teams that were complete garbage and had no idea what they were doing, but they were just taking part in it. And you don't have to be good to participate in the Alliance Tournament. That's a huge, huge thing. But then after Alliance Tournament 11, that two teams at the top quickly became five teams at the top, which quickly became 10 teams at the top. And you look at the competition in the last 2 years, and this is one of the saddest things, because I know viewership has dropped, but the competition has increased drastically over the last 2 years. Like, these pilots are really very, very good. And if you play 10 times, there's going to be 10 different outcomes. I really believe that. So you could have a scenario where Tuskers win. You could have a scenario when NC Dot wins. You could have a scenario where Hydra wins. You can have a scenario where Vydra wins. Like, it could have gone either way very easily.
But isn't that the same groups? Like, one of those five groups is going to win.
Yeah, but it used to be one of those two groups is going to win. And then there's always, every single year, there's always been, for the last 3 or 4 years, there's always been like a weird Cinderella story that you didn't think was going to show up there. Like Triumvirate. Triumvirate was a top four team, and no one really expected them to do anything. Like, their entire Alliance Hornet team was predicated on beating their first round draw, which was Test. That's all they wanted to do. They're like, okay, if we beat Test, we'll be happy. But they made it all the way towards the final. Like, these guys had to theorycraft going into that final weekend and the last weekends, because they didn't have any setups left. So, because they didn't think that they're going to get that far. And, you know, they just outpiloted their opponents.
But aren't, I mean, so, you know, NC wasn't that great at the tournament either. And all of a sudden they became great. Nelly Segundo wasn't that great at the tournament. And all of a sudden they became great. But all those instances, it was AT teams moving from one group to the other. So it was the same guys that were making different names great.
Sort of. It was the same theory crafting core, but it wasn't necessarily the same pilots. Like, DHB mm-hmm. Wildcat went to the NC Dot team, and that kind of started NC Dot's rise to Alliance Tournament greatness. But Ajax is the guy who literally runs the team, and he wasn't on the Hydra team before. He wasn't on like 18 winning teams before. So he kind of took with that. And also Vince Draken had a huge buy-in with the AT for the NC Dot team. He was like, yo, this is important. I'm going to invest quite a lot of money in these ships, so you guys can have whatever you want to theorycraft with.
Yeah. And why was it important? That's interesting, because one of the things that's really amazing about the Alliance tournament is the amount of exposure for recruitment. I think it really plays into groups that want to attract good pilots to do well in the Alliance tournament had benefits for the whole operation, not just the guys that played in the tournament.
I mean, for the longest time, PL could be PL because of the Alliance tournament. Like, we didn't care what happened to us. We didn't have to hold moons. We didn't have to do anything because we had this trillion-esque resource that would come every year. And for a little while, we were kind of the odds-on favorite to win every year. And so it was quite helpful in the early days of PL, or at least the PL under me. and well, the PL under Seamus, Shadu, and then later me, the AT played a huge role. It wasn't necessarily a recruitment tool. It wasn't like, haha, we're the best. It was, hey, we're going to get trillions of ISK here, which kind of frees up our ability to whelp for a little while if we have to. And that's huge. It gives you so many options. Like, oh, do I want to be friends with these people? Oh, I don't necessarily have to because I have this massive cache of resources that, that got handed to me.
Yeah. So to put this in perspective, if players have only arrived, say, in the last 3 to 5 years, Pandemic Legion's reputation was so potent that FCs would shake in their boots and lose a fight before it ever got started. And it was a lot of it was based on the reputation from the pandemic win streak in the Alliance tournament.
You could scare players into behaving by telling them that PL was on the other side of the gate. It was, yeah, it was like that.
Is that right? That's pretty funny. Well, the Alliance tournament was something, of course, that a lot of people did watch. But I think what people need to understand is it's not a group of a few really good players duking it out for a trillion in prizes, trillion ISK in prizes. It has a lot of secondary effects. It has entertainment value for people. It has cheering for your own group or your allies or booing against your enemies. It has exposure and recruitment that lasts the entire year or longer. And again, reputations get built and stick around for a long time based on how good your team does in the Alliance tournament. And really sometimes how bad your team does, not just not doing well in the tournament because you were defeated, that's going to happen, but just how badly you behave. Like, I think there was some pretty bad behavior from certain groups, and I think they lost a lot of favor in EVE. Right? Like, I'm thinking of Tissue did that stunt, and it really damaged their reputation, even as jokesters and meme addicts or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. And people even throwing matches and stuff, that kind of forever tainted some people's view of them as well. But I think one of the big things, the big takeaway that I got when we chatted with CCP Falcon, I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday, is that he also absolutely understands the value of the tournament. He knows it's not just some little stunt that's a cost sink that they put on every year for the sake of putting it on. He knows what it represents. He understands you know, what it means, what the value it has. And that's very important, because a lot of these people who were mad or upset or had an intense reaction, a lot of them I saw, they were saying, well, CCP doesn't know what they're getting rid of, right? They have no concept of the value this has. They think of it as something that's not, so by their metrics, it's failing. But no, that's absolutely not the case. CCP Falcon made it very clear that they know the value of it. And, you know, he was gutted when because he said he was the one that partially made the call to not have it this year, to put it on hiatus. So he was not really happy about the fact that it was going away, but he understood that, you know, it's better to have a good tournament than just to throw some shit together and put on a bad one with very little, you know, infrastructure and very little backing.
One of the things that struck me, and we'll wrap up after this on the Alliance tournament, but it struck me at how it seemed desperately he was wanting to communicate, hey, this is not going away. We're retooling it. I made the decision. He was trying to infuse everybody with confidence. Now, I guess there was a bonfire among some players, and so he was responding to that, you know, saying, hey, chill out. We're going to get back to this. It's not going away, and that sort of thing. Did you think this was communicated well? Like, was it the proper way to communicate that this wasn't going to happen?
I think there were parts of it that were good and parts of it that were bad. I think the fact that he stayed up until 4 a.m. his time to talk about it with two people on the internet, I think that was pretty huge. But I think the thread Alliance Hornet update got people really excited. And then the update was that it wasn't going to be on. And so it kind of, I don't know. It was a bit of a jumble, I think, that blog. I think it was a bit of a miss, especially because they made it seem like, oh, we're not having Alliance tournament this year in exchange for some balance passes or something like that, which really seems kind of crappy, or a crummy way to put it.
Come to think of it, isn't that what Blizzard did earlier in the year? They said, we're going to have an announcement on Diablo, and then the announcement was, there's no really good announcement on Diablo. So it was like expectations skyrocketed and then they crashed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and they tried like a few days before to go, no, wait, guys, hold your expectations in a little bit, but that didn't work either. Yeah, no. It's not on the same scale as that communications mistake, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, the hype for like the buildup for this one was literally just like the previous lines, like that was it. But the thing is, this is the one of the times where their actions are better than their words in terms of messaging, right? So they made this announcement in mid-February, knowing like they know full well around this time is when Alliance Tournament pilots start coming back to start getting the rust off. Like teams started organizing practices for the beginning of March, right? So they knew very well if they were going to get rid of it, that they would have to get rid of it now and not later. So that shows that they understood, you know, a little bit about the people who are into the Alliance tournament and an appreciation for their time. Instead of, I mean, this could have very easily, if it was in a different circumstance, been like June, been like, oh, by the way, we don't have Alliance tournament this year. Sorry.
Well, some of them are flying in these high-end top 10 alliances, by the way. Some of the CCP devs are flying in those top 10 alliances you're mentioning for the AT. They're not necessarily on the team itself, which would be awkward, but they are aware of practices starting and stuff like that.
You were now, about those to blow my mind there.
Oh, dude. But yeah, I didn't know that. Those are not, you know, a lot of this call was made by CCP Falcon. I'm not saying he's on one of those because I don't think he is, but he doesn't have time. But those people are talking to Falcon at work over lunch.
So they're directly, they have a direct line into CCP. So
CCP is surprised that CCP is aware of the cycle.
Yeah, man, you were about to blow my mind saying that CCPers were in the Alliance tournament. I was like, whoa, we're making news today.
Yeah.
Okay. Elise, anything else on the Alliance tournament?
No, I'm personally bummed that it's not going to be here, but I'm hopeful that when it comes back, it'll be, you know, have the proper amounts of resources allocated to make it good, because there's nothing worse than, you know, giving it a good amount of resources, like private testing servers and all these tools, and then taking it back the next year and just saying, well, just practice wherever, whatever. Like, who knows? And maybe the test server is going to have a different build. So again, who knows? So kind of making sure that it has the right resources. I'm really hopeful that it comes back in a good form in a good amount of time, right? I know a lot of people are like, well, this might be CCP time, which could be 2 years. But I'm really hopeful that by this time next year, we'll have a really strong Alliance tournament to kind of, or a competitive EVE scene type thing to keep going.
Yeah, we'll see. So let's bring in Seth. Carneros, you want to set this one up? We're going to talk about the Russian block.
That's okay. All right. The Russian community in EVE is in transition right now. There's a little something starting on the right side of the map. there are other parts of EVE that's transitioning. If we stop and look, for example, at the Red Menace Coalition down in Period Basis, they're transitioning right now. Some folks are running off to go join this new thing that's starting on the right side of the map. Some people are going back to staying. Some people are trying something new. A couple of corporations joined the Bastion, so I have a little awareness of what's going on from talking to them. But some of them haven't picked yet, and they're thinking about their circumstances and they're looking at their options. But this is going on in the south, and then over in the east. At least tell them what you see happening in the east around test and fraternity.
And well, we know that the test and fraternity NIP is starting to, or is reaching towards its end. I think it ends, Dunk was telling me, the beginning of next. And it does seem like there's going to be a little bit of skirmishing heading up over there. And especially these Russian blocks, you know, it's a really good target is fraternity. They're similar time zones. They're similar size. You know, they're similar in clout. And I could really see this Russian group going over towards this fraternity group and, you know, tests and the whole legacy coalition kind of propping it up so that they can have some action on their doorstep without having to really get involved with anything.
Well, let's bring in Seth if we can.
Actually, I want to ask you some question about this. What do you think have pushed all these Russian alliances into one coalition? I know the real answer, but I want to hear your guesses about this. Yeah, it will be interesting for me and interesting for people.
Yeah, yeah. So what do we hear out there that is the reason that this is happening?
I mean, honestly, this is kind of like just par for the course for Russian groups, right? They have something, they get big, they fall, they go kind of rebuild a little bit, and then they realize that they're very strong together and form a coalition. But it does definitely smell like someone's kind of backing them a little bit to create a little proxy war. But, you know, that's just a little bit of tinfoil. Well, I don't think it's tinfoil, but I think that's just a little bit of how Eve goes, right? You prop up some allies, and then you kind of get involved on their fights.
What do you think, Carneros?
I'm super curious to hear what Seth's going to say. I don't know. I'm, you know, I've got four Russian corporations in the Bastion. I pretty much can only usually talk to one guy in each. I don't speak Russian. It's tricky. You know, my snapshots of insight don't give me the background necessary to understand.
So one of the things we've been hearing, Seth, is there's a couple things. One is I heard earlier today that the Imperium is essentially expanding into period basis. Of course, Carneros is going to deny this really quickly, but I want to get it out first. Or they basically have said, you know, either join the Imperium or get out. That sort of a thing.
No, they just bought the space, which wasn't very well utilized before. When was the last time you flew through period basis? There wasn't a lot going on.
I think I was living there in 2013 or something.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, long time.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a lot going on, and you guys bought up the space. The Imperium bought up the space from RA, but some RA guys stuck around, right? Red Alliance is RA, by the way.
Yeah, Red Alliance, Red Menace. There's still a bunch of them there thinking about what they want to do next. There's not like some big time pressure on them to, you know, do this or their donuts are going to expire. No. So they,
you know. But they weren't forced out is what you're saying. They weren't forced out.
No.
Okay. Cause the natural expansion for,
these guys are our friends.
Right. The natural expansion though, if you look on the map for Delve is south, cause that's a protected space. People would have to go through Delve to get to period basis basically, or go through Stain. And so it's an easy expansion for the Imperium to take over. It's very safe. They could utilize the space better. So you can see how there would be an incentive for them to say, if we're going to expand, we'll just go south a little bit. Okay. I've also heard, I think it was Mitani talking yesterday on his show, the Meta show, that he didn't know why they were getting together, because normally a coalition comes together in some kind of mutual interest to defend themselves. And that's probably formed out of his experience forming with the Russians way back in 2007 when Red Alliance and Goon Swarm were both kind of outcasts and needed to merge together and take on the Bob and greater Bob community menace. But that was his point of view, that this was weird because normally you come together to defend yourselves. You don't just come together and say, we're going to do something.
That is true, though. I remember like the most successful incarnation of the DRF, the one that punched out everyone in the north with Solar Fleet, XIX, and White Noise, and all those groups. They came together to attack, right? They were like, oh, they saw that the old Northern Coalition had done some moves in the north, and they were like, you know what? We take them. And they just formed like this crazy out of nowhere massive group to go on the offensive. But I do know like the Russian community is really passionate, right? And they don't like being considered crabbers. They don't like being considered pets or anything like that. They like to control their own destiny, especially groups like XX and Solar.
Yeah. And so one last thing, Seth, before you tell us the actual answer, this is the last guess, is that fraternity has been attacking, I think, XIX, and they're mad about it. And so I guess fraternity has kind of like broken a couple promises to them or something like that. So basically, this is kind of a revenge for that kind of behavior. So those are all the guesses. Other people have their guesses. You can put them in chat. But let's hear from somebody who knows Seth.
Okay. Let me say you the real reason about this all. The real reason is very simple. It's just greed. These people don't have enough space to live in after RMC lost their space in period basis, and XIX have only part of it in reefs to live in, and the Siberian squad have only few constellations in the branch, and they are some kind of big alliances, and they need more space to live in, but they don't have any, so they have to take something, and there is only one place where they can take this. It is China space, really. But actually, on their own, they can do nothing about China and Chinese, of course. They need test help for this, and test will help them for sure.
Well, there it is. The answer is greed and expansion. Good old-fashioned expansion.
Yes, but also they understand that no one from these alliances is actually can do something on the map. They all can be pets only. No XIX, no Red Alliance, no Siberian Squad can do something on their own. They are just, they were parts of huge coalitions like GOTK, like Legacy, and like Imperium, so they are just trying to build their own coalition, but it is still weak. It is still not strong enough to fight some of the coalitions like GOTK, like Legacy, like Imperium, or like Panfam. It's still not enough. They need help of a huge coalition, and they have chosen Legacy as a base.
I see. So war is definitely coming to Fraternity, and Legacy right now is being held off from attacking Fraternity by a non-aggression pact. So they can't attack right now until late March, which is in about a month. And so you think this is kind of gearing up for a test and what's the new Russian bloc called?
No idea.
We're just going to call it the DRF. That's what they're always called, right? That doesn't matter.
So you think it's a test plus DRF assault on Fraternity space?
Yes, for sure. In 1 month, it will be assault, but I'm not sure it will be successful. Let's see how it will go. Because there is one problem with Russians. If everything goes okay, they can work with each other. But if will be some fuck-ups during all this campaign, it will be a lot of hate between them, during this coalition members, maybe. They will hate each other very fast if they won't be successful.
So if they're not successful, they're going to have a problem staying together.
Yes. They don't like each other, as obvious.
Interesting. So who's going to be helping Fraternity, if, or is Fraternity going to have to fight this alone?
No idea.
I mean, Pacific Court has always been helping Fraternity lately, so I would imagine.
If Pandemic Horde gets involved, though, then other people will notice.
Yeah, okay. It is going to be a huge problem if Pandemic Horde will be involved. It will be Goons and Imperium involved, too, and it will be a massive clusterfuck in the Fraternity space. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the point, though, right? All these groups there, they kind of do want a war to happen that's not on their doorstep, that's not really affecting them at all, so their ratters aren't affected. They can come and go as they please. They don't have to create timers. They don't have to be beholden to anything, right? So if you're Pandemic Horde, you want to prop up Fraternity as much as you can. And if you're Tappy, you want to prop up the DRF as much as you can and get these guys to fight really kind of close to you, and then just show up whenever you want.
Because I know there are one or two Imperium SIGs, special interest groups, that are purposely up in the north because of Pandemic Horde. Logically, if Pandemic Horde goes somewhere else to help someone else, those groups don't have any reason to be there anymore. So they probably pick somewhere else to go. Just saying.
Yeah.
I am willing to see how China will fight these all groups in their space. I'm thinking that they are self-confident enough and they can form a huge blob to defend themselves in their time zone. So let's see what will happen.
So they might just try to fight this on their own.
Yes, I think they have enough to do it, actually. They have been preparing for this for a long time, and they have grown into something really strong. I think everyone is just underestimated.
Yeah.
I was surprised by Tess' decision who let Red Alliance survive. It was really shocking for me that they decided to let XIX gave some space for Red Alliance to rat in and put their oracles. It's just shocking because I have never expected this from Test. They have been fighting Red Alliance for a long time, and Red Alliance is not the kind of allies that you don't want to have, because they can really betray you very fast. And they betrayed Test at least two times, as I know. But still, Test let them in again. Such a strange thing.
Oh, that's interesting. So Red Alliance and Test should not be friendly with one another, but somehow XIX got the blessing, or did it on their own, let RA come into their area.
XIX can't do anything on their own. They do anything on with Test agreement, because they actually can do nothing on their own. We fought them a long time, like 1 month ago, and they always called Legacy to help them to fight just two alliances like Scourge and Heal Yourself, and they wasn't managed to hold us, so they called back Test from North, and that's how they pull us off, really, only with the help of whole Test Alliance.
So, okay, XIX will only do this if Test approves, and it's surprising that Test approved that RA should come into the area.
Yes.
Interesting. So we tried to get Naros on today. He's the leader of Fraternity and Wind Spirits as well. Both guys were busy at the time, but we'll try to get comment from them on what they see. The one thing I did ask is, hey, is war coming to you guys? And they're like, oh, yes. So they're very much expecting to be attacked or to fight in this war. So it looks like it's going to happen. And it also looks like, as Seth was explaining, it can happen in isolation with Fraternity fighting this Russian coalition. But as we know, these kinds of conflicts can also bring in allies and grow into wider engagements than just one coalition against another.
I think one of the interesting things that's happened now is after Red Alliance leaving, period basis and goons moving in. Now you have Legacy and the Imperium sharing a border. So, I mean, they now butt right up against one another. There's no little group playing third party as a buffer. There's one gate. There's the G-Magic TCAG gate, and that's it.
I need to ask this question to Seth, because you were a part of Scourge, the Scourge, and you have recently moved into Skill U. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And so wasn't Skill U, or I don't know if it was the Scourge too, but wasn't Skill U attacking Test from fraternity positions?
Yes, it was.
And you were, because you don't have a non-aggression pact with Test, so you're allowed to do that.
Yes.
So is this a kind of revenge that Test would let RA come here into their territory to attack back fraternities? It's like a proxy war because they're not able to attack each other?
It wasn't a proxy war. We just were coming for some content to kill some legacy pets and XAX were also legacy pets. So, this was a fun war. Nothing valuable was destroyed or attacked. We haven't attacked any Sotio or Asbel. So, China never asked us to do that. I think Chinese decision was connected with that fact. If they won't let us go and shoot these legacy pets, that it will be their pets who will be farmed. So it's not really a huge choice for them. And all right. I think Test understand that, and they didn't broke NIP.
Right, so... So then Skill U, and was Scourge involved in those fights?
Yes.
Okay. So those were attacks that were not in coordination with Fraternity?
Nope. Fraternity was never involved. I have asked one time to protect my enthusiasm Drake, but it was just one time. I was having some fun and my fleet was like 2 jumps out and it was a nightmare, so they never could save my Drake. But I asked Fraternity to kill 5 people who were attacking it, so they brought a 40 man blob.
So you started an international incident to save a Drake?
No, it wasn't an incident. Yeah, Drake is always a precious thing to save.
It was
especially if it is like 5 minutes left on an enthusiasm cycle.
It had legacy rigs.
Yeah, legacy rigs. No, but I see. It was to save an entosis attempt. Okay. Well, thanks for telling us the actual truth. We'll see how this conflict kind of expands and becomes hot, right? Right now, people are just setting up, but I think we're finally going to see, at least in some part, that Russian versus Chinese time zone fight that everybody wanted to see like a year ago.
Okay. Also, there is a lot of Russian propaganda on Russian evil forums, and this is very funny things to read.
Oh, there's a propaganda war on the Russian Eve sites?
They are posting it like holy war for Russian coalitions, and they are mentioning times when they were all like gods and the Russians were ruling half of the Eve, and now it is time to retake what is ours, and there are a lot of posts like this. But seriously, it is just stupid.
So they're going to reclaim old glory of Russian dominance of Eve Online.
I love it.
Yeah, but it's funny with the fact that they can do nothing about it without testing.
Yeah, so this is an artwork. This is more people saying stuff in forums, right?
Yeah, it will be more posting on forums than real action at all.
If you find any artwork, can you post it in TIS Public so we can see some of it? Because this sounds really fun. I'll assume that the silence is a yes.
Yeah, Seth, we want to see some copies of it. They're asking in the Twitch chat.
Now, I'd love to see some Russian memes. That's owns. Yeah. The last Russian meme I saw was the Vajra Reloaded AT ad, which was pretty fantastic. Actually, I think they even made a response to the AT being canceled ad using Interstellar, which I didn't even know I could feel that hard about the Alliance tournament before. It was pretty great.
You didn't know you had those feelings deep down.
Yeah, it's that scene in Interstellar when McConaughey is just like bawling, right?
Okay, so thanks, Seth. You put it in public. So Talking Station's public channel. You can check out some Russian propaganda there.
Yeah, it's really funny, but you have to use Google Translate to read it.
Memes are the universal language. We'll get there.
Oh, that's pretty funny. All right, that's cool. So thank you, Seth, for putting that stuff in there. But most of all, thanks for giving us the scoop on what's going on over there. How's it going in your transition to Skill U? Is it an easy transition?
Yes, easy transition. Very easy. I can explain the whole situation just in a short.
Sure.
I have been running my Alliance for like 3 years, and I have been a bit tired of this because I have a team of people who were running it with me, and they were doing a lot of stuff around it, but they have left the game.
I just want to make sure everybody knows that you're the lead FC and CEO and leader of The Scourge, who's known really well as tough fighters around the test legacy area.
Yeah, so I decided, and then half of my team were like not playing anymore, and half of my team just quit if, so I decided that I should spend less time in if because I can't do anything for my alliance alone, and I have no people who can play with me on enough level, so I decided to join Skill U. There are a lot of skilled people who can help me and who can I help with organizing something interesting in this game. Just it. Some people are really lazy and I can't push them to do things. Really, it's very stupid idea to make someone do something. People should do it on their own. It should be their own inner intention to do. And if I have to run over chats and tell everyone, like, you do this and you do this, and it will be stupid. People should understand what are they doing and why are they doing it. It's simple things.
Yeah. At least you run an alliance and a very good one, Pandemic Legion. Is it rough getting people to do stuff? And of course, Carneros.
I don't do it anymore. But yeah, it was always difficult to make the decisions to kind of give people enough ability to do what they wanted to. Right? That was the hardest. That was basically the only decision we had to make: is what should we do that'll give the people who want to do stuff unlimited movement to do that. So essentially, leading alliance is just facilitating the content enablers, at least my type of alliance.
What about you, Carneros? You're an alliance leader too.
It's a lot of work. You either have to organize everything for the group yourself, or you have to delegate to groups or individuals to organize some of the stuff for you. Like we have a SIG in the Bastion. We have a SIG that went off to go do their own thing. I get diplomatic stuff coming back to me because of what they're doing. And they're asking me, is the Bastion this or is the Bastion that? And I go, okay, that's a SIG doing that. I don't know what they're doing. Do I need to go dig into this? Is it that serious? And, and then it comes back to, do I plan all of this again myself? Or do I trust them and just ride out the occasional diplomatic storm? You know, there's a lot of choices, and it's tiring to do all the work yourself too long. You've got to delegate. The Mitanni is really good at that, by the way.
Yeah.
But there is a huge problem that you have now and to delegate something. Because the Russian community is too small, and I just don't have enough people at all in it to give them something to do, who really understand how to do some stuff and how to work with something. That's actually why I think Red Alliance and this XIX coalition won't hold for long. They don't have people who know current meta. They do not have people who know how to rule fleets, how to organize them. So that's a problem. Just small community and not enough people. And the best people just burned out and don't want to play on high level.
I think it's sometimes... and it's just from my experience in running Talking in Stations, which for all intents and purposes, like a corporation, it's about 15 of us. And sometimes it's hard to delegate because you have to, it takes more time to delegate it than it does to just do it. But that leaves you in a trap where you're doing everything and everybody's sitting around waiting to do something to be meaningful in some way. Now, I'm not saying that's the Talking in Stations experience, but that's kind of in general leadership and management.
If you want to do something good, you have to do it on your own, actually.
Well, yeah, if you want it done the way you want it done, yeah. But also, if you delegate to somebody, and it's not real life work that we're talking about Eve here, you've got to be okay with what they're going to produce. And if you're not, then it becomes frustrating in a different way. Like you're delegating like crazy, but the stuff that's coming back to you is not exactly what you wanted. And so it starts to feel like I'm not getting what I want out of this. So I'll just do it myself.
And you can't, the hard thing is when you do delegate something, you can't, reward someone monetarily, really. Even in-game ISK isn't a huge reward. So what you generally have to do, I think all the most successful Alliance leaders do this, is you create a value for something that has no real intrinsic value, right? Like, so extra roles, extra responsibilities, extra something, or extra respect. And then you can pay people in that type of thing instead of in-game currency or out-of-game currency.
That's very interesting. So you're rewarding people with reputation or position or title, but
exactly, or some modicum of power as well.
Doesn't that also then create behavioral problems with with people that you like their work, but they're kind of hard on everybody else? So, and you put them in a place of power.
I mean, if you have someone like that that's really toxic, then you're better off without their work. You know, that's one of the hardest decisions that you have to learn as an Alliance leader or a corp leader or something, is when to cut someone loose.
Wild. Well, those are the pitfalls of leadership. So Seth lost a lot of his people that he trusted, and he decided instead of carrying on by himself that he was going to move into Skilloo. I like the way you say it too, by the way, Seth. Skilloo?
Yes.
And you get to say hi to my peak friends in there too.
Ah, yes, the Peaky Blinders. And that is Higher Than Everest Corporation, friend of the show. I think he's a friend of the show. We love him as Harvey Skywalker. And
also, the situation is a bit different than you said. I were running that alliance for like half of a year without almost any help. Actually, with help one guy who is a winner of... two last Alliance tournaments. Oh. And yeah, and he helped me a lot, but like 1 month ago he was burned up by stupidity of some Alliance members and he decided to quit for some time. And after this I decided to close an Alliance at all, because I had no one to give.
Yikes.
So some orders and who can actually do them well.
So you lost one of your best guys because of conflict in the corp or the alliance?
Yes.
Hopefully he takes a little break and gets his energy back and comes back and joins you.
He will come back with me in Skilloo for sure.
Oh, I bet. All right. Well, so there's some leadership lessons. We should probably do a show on it. I think there's enough material there on how to properly incentivize volunteers, basically, or group members or tribal members, whatever you want to call them, and how to make it so that you're not the only one doing everything, because when you leave or you burn out, everything's over. And we see that over and over again in different corporations. So we'll do a leadership show at some point. But let's move on. We want to talk about a low-sec brawl, at least, that you were looking at.
Yeah, it's actually a really funny little story of how it all played out. And I mean, to go into it fully, you have to go back quite far, but I'll try and keep it brief. So essentially, there's a role player group that has an Astra house in Sifilar. And a competing role player group has put out a hit on that Astra house. But they couldn't do it themselves, so they hired a mercenary. The first group of mercenaries they hired completely failed. So they hired a second group that was much better in terms of skill. It's Did He Say Jump, which is Predator Elite's group. So Predator Elite and their group went to reinforce the Citadel. And it kind of, they missed the timer because I had a different op somewhere. But eventually they came back, put it in reinforced. And for the armor timer, the role players bat phoned basically, well, it's not role players. It's RC Elkin, who goes by also the moniker Baleful Dysnomia on Twitch. And she streams public fleets and stuff like that. A huge role player, Omar role player. And so she called in all the favors from all the role players and people who kind of like pseudo role play across the cluster, and they all came together. So there was a bunch of Kaldari role players. There was the IRED guys. There was basically all the Amar role players that wanted to come to help. And then they also got help from Templis Kalsif, who showed up to fight the Did He Say Jump guys. They basically third partied on this timer. And so it was basically an even fight. Did He Say Jump dropped caps. And then the other guys, the Templis Kalsif guys, dropped other caps. And then it got so large in terms of a small e-fight that Snuffbox came in. So Snuffbox came in, killed all the caps on grid. Everyone ran. And then Snuff had to leave Sifilar, which has no stations or anything. So they went ahead and they just jumped the gate and they were going to jump out. At this point, the role players, the mercenaries who would reinforce the role players bridge, and the Templis Kalsif guys all, within a matter of like 3 or 4 minutes, said, hey, let's drop our hostilities for a moment here and go for killing these Snuff guys.
Nice. By the way, we had the CEO of Did He Say Jump on Talking in Stations Midweek Report with Artemis and Ron. And that can be found in our, again, talkinginstations.com. I think it's called Did He Say Jump. So check out that episode about 3 episodes back.
Yeah, they're a really good group of guys. They're probably the strongest little low-sec group that's not affiliated with. But anyway, so these guys, just who were enemies 5 minutes ago, decided to say, you know what, Snuff is the bigger enemy here. So we're going to go pin these caps down and try and kill it. So Snuff, eventually, after like an hour or two of just being pinned down on a gate, had to call in for a little bit more backup. And they bled quite a little bit in terms of, obviously, for them, it's nothing, right? But for this these low-sep groups, it was this pretty huge thing. And now Snuff is mad, right, at everybody. So yeah, they went ahead and reinforced the Fortizar of Did He Say Jump. So now there's like this huge little low-sec kerfluffle going on with all these huge groups that are now involved that literally just started because two role players were squabbling over an Astra house. It's really fascinating and just absolutely hilarious. Like, I know a lot of people think low-sec is drying up, and by all accounts, maybe it is compared to what it used to be, but there are still elements that are absolutely hilarious, and this is one of them. So
this is That's the kind such of stuff a, that needs to be written up. I want to read
it's
this
such story. An Eve-like plot twist.
Yeah, and actually, if you want to go take it further back, the whole reason that these two role players are like at each other's throats is because there was an event that the role play guys at CCP started. CCP Delegate Zero put out a little article.
A chronicle?
A chronicle, there you go. Over like an event in Thebeka. And Thebeka, it was just a Zamar HiSec station or system. And essentially, if you want to get down to the nitty-gritty, there was like a slave revolt that was put in place. And so these two role player groups from either side kind of got involved. They had this big fight over in Thebeka, over citadels and stuff. And all those grudges carried over into this. So you just have two or three little articles posted by the events team. And some buy-in internally from CCP, and you get all these little funny side effects that come out at the end.
So this literally is the butterfly effect, right? This little ripple that was dropped in is now having bigger reverberations elsewhere.
Yeah, and it's hit the non-role player community as well. It's really fascinating. It's something I've been kind of keeping an eye on as it started, because when the Becca thing started, it was the largest fight that role players had had that were like exclusively role players. And I got to talk to people on both sides of it or on all sides of it. And just literally every role play group got involved, even like the Sansha role play group. And so just everyone was like, oh shit, this is the role play is kind of happening again. And a bunch of people resubbed. And you're talking about people that played the game at the beginning of the game coming back, like the first player corp, the first alliance, like the very, very first that happened on TQ.
Wow. So they're coming back to get in on this this storyline.
Yeah. And then all this random stuff happens. And it's just funny to see exactly the butterfly effect happen. But the fight in Siflar the other day on Friday, it was just so funny because these people were, I was there and people weren't, these people weren't like on comms with one another. It was essentially just like convoying one another and be like, hey, we're working together for the next 30 minutes to kill these caps. So all the role players came back in Punishers to pin down snuff caps. And then it was just hilarious.
That's one local chat I would actually like to read. The RPers communicating with one another, opening up communications.
Yeah, it was definitely a sight. It was really cool.
Oh, that's hilarious. I'm gonna definitely go back and start reading the backstory on this so I can get involved in watching it too. But if you feel like writing about it, I would love to read this sort of just this whole thing. This is the kind of stuff that's so delicious about Eve and very exclusive to it. It takes a long time to really marinate the characters and the people involved and stuff. You don't just come into a place and do this. This is like old history and backstory that makes the richness of the story. Okay, so we're hearing it's Friday, Siflar and Arzad. I guess those are going to be some big fights. Maybe we'll try to cover those live.
Yeah, and the did he say jump citadel that got reinforced by snuff, I think is in Amamaki, but I'm not sure.
We'll find out about that. All right, so we got one more topic before we have to go. And we were debating talking about this one, but it's about a video that was put out, I guess it was just yesterday. We got mentioned in it. So does anybody know about that video?
Yeah. As a general rule, it's a bad idea to try to respond to every video that goes up on the internet that you disagree with. That's probably a bad idea. Even the ones that mention talking in stations in some way. But you know what? I've listened to it. We'll chat about it for a second.
Yeah.
Hold
on one second. You're about to explain what it is, but it came to my attention because it was posted in Talking in Stations public. And so we looked at it, and it wasn't just about us. It was definitely about the state of the game and CCP and stuff. And so, Carneros, take us through what the video is about.
Well, the guy is worried about the direction in which each Eve is going. He's very sensitive to monetization, and he's worried about Eve. Okay, that's valid. There are a lot of things you can be worried about Eve for, and one of the most painful and sensitive sections is the monetization. If CCP could make three mistakes in a given year, and one of them has to do with monetization, that's probably just going to be, by human nature, the most painful mistake they can make. Okay. The thing where the guy goes off the rails a little bit is he mentions Pearl Abyss and Black Desert Online every other line. Guys, September 2018 was the Pearl Abyss deal. We're in February 2019. It is the nature of software development timelines and game development timelines that nothing about that deal could be the problem in Eve right now. It's just not possible. It's not. So if you can worry about Pearl Abyss in the future, that's valid. It's future worries, though. All future worries are valid by definition. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. But nothing today is the problem. It's like if you walk into a donut store and you buy a dozen donuts, they're not the reason why you're fat. No. That was all the previous stuff that happened that made you fat. It's not those donuts.
What are you trying to say?
Well, no. I'm trying to use an analogy.
I'm sorry,
the timeline is important here. So there's nothing about Eve Online today that is influenced by Pearl Abyss. Nothing in the game. Nothing. Zero. Absolute zero. There are, now he has some good content in there. There's this one chart where he talks about the last X number of holiday events in Eve. Yes, the current holiday event has some complaints. Yeah, I kind of agree that they were better years ago than they are today, some of them, some of these events. I think that, some brilliant that you pulled up that slide that you knew exactly what to grab. Yeah, he remembers this stuff pretty well. I bet you some of the designers at CCP haven't looked at it all in one thing like this before. That's how
he being the author of this video, we don't know his name, but yeah, author of this video.
Yeah, he didn't label it really well, so I don't really know what his name is. I think he watches the show. I'm not saying anything bad about him. It's helpful to look at this and to compare and contrast previous events and current events. I will be honest that I don't personally play any of the, I never played any of those events in the game, and I don't really think that the holiday stuff has a massive effect on the game itself. I think it's a small side show, but I might be wrong. I don't play normal Eve. I play this NullSec version of Eve. I do think that the gifts over Christmas are a big deal and have an effect. And I do think the augmentation thing, he talks about our opinion on the augment that they did at Christmas that allowed you to temporarily use skill injectors as if there were no diminishing returns.
The augmented injector booster.
Yeah. I used a few of them. I didn't use them on all of my eligible characters, but I used a few of them. I do think, I still do to this day think that CCP didn't really intend originally for them to be as potent as they were. And that when they figured it out, there probably wasn't enough time left and developer resources left to actually go back and change it and do a full QA pass and then do a full build and then do a release cycle. I don't, that it takes more work to do this stuff than you think, guys. Even if all you did was go in and tweak one thing, you have to do a full build again. And then you have to do a full QA pass, at least a partial QA pass on that build again before you can put it out. There's more work than you think. Going back to the reference to Occam's razor, it's usually the simplest answer that's the most likely to be true for a given question. But you know what? I might be wrong. Maybe there's some nefarious agent who took a job at CCP and is doing stuff that, and I don't know them. Who else has thoughts? I don't want to rant.
I mean, I think Brisk brings up a really good point, right? The live team, the people who do these events are trying to figure out what's going to be successful in EVE and what's not going to be successful in EVE. Because, I mean, just because other games do something that's a success doesn't necessarily mean it's going to transcribe really well to the EVE community. So they're trying to swing to see what events are good, what events are hits, what events are fun. And this might have been a bit of a miss in terms of that.
Well, the thing that they're doing faster than I've noticed ever before is course correcting. So if an event comes out, it has some problems, those problems are fixed right away. Like, they are addressed. They go after those problems quickly. I don't know if that's the case this time, but it definitely was the time before. And I think that they are trying new stuff. The contention that the video maker is making is essentially that CCP is trying to make more money because they're new. We'll call them overlords, are making them make more money. And so all the stuff that's geared for veteran players is becoming super expensive. The Plex, the injectors, the things that speed up your skilling time. What are those called? Those are...
accelerators.
Thank you. Accelerators are becoming more expensive. And the idea is that you want to get the guys that are veterans who have a lot of money to blow their money, so they'll actually have to use real money instead of their ISK money, because those are the guys that are most likely to use real money. They're the ones that are most invested. And so the idea is this is a very, very deep thinking ploy to separate players from their money, kind of thing.
And at one point he says, it's not fair because they didn't design this gift to be equally beneficial to all players. And I take issue with that, because I don't think there's any rule in EVE that says a new feature has to be equally beneficial to all players. There, EVE isn't a level playing field. Also, there are a couple of other assumptions he makes. Like, he looks at ISK in 2015 and he looks at ISK in 2019 and he compares the price of Plex over that time. Well, a billion ISK in 2015 is not the same thing as a billion ISK in 2019. And you have to take into account the value of currency changing over time if you're going to compare the price then and the price now. And nice. Also, skill points are not equally valuable. Your first 100 million skill points are the most valuable skill points for your character. Your second 100 million skill points that you train between 100 million and 1 and 200 million are less valuable than your first 100. And your third 100 skill points when you eventually get there, I haven't yet, are not as valuable as your second 100 million. Because you train, you can pick any order and you train the most valuable stuff urgently first. Dude. Sorry, go ahead.
That's a great point. That's a great point. All skill points are not the same. Yeah. Well, Noisy Gamer points out, this is what I was going to say, that Plex is actually more expensive. Plex getting more expensive ISK-wise means that CCP is actually making less money in real life. I am sure he's worked out the logic in that. He's somebody who watches CCP on the business side of things. Yeah, very closely. You can read his blog, Noisy Gamer blog, and he breaks down how CCP and their relationship with money and their relationship with the black market of virtual money as well, because there's a lot of...
EVE is not currently growing. It's not. It's if they want to put food on the table, which I highly endorse and I understand, you know, you have to make some money somewhere. They're not public, they haven't been thinking about being publicly traded and needing to make more and more and more and more. They do have investors, and their investors care. They did have investors. They cleaned off that plate in September. Those people needed a story and they needed an option to cash out, and they got it. They got what they needed. These are not the same quarterly driven, they haven't been the same quarterly driven results that you see from Activision Blizzard. I hate to bring up that stuff because that's super emotional right now. I have a lot of friends who just lost their jobs and are trying to figure out what to do. You can't look at all of the monetization problems across the rest of the industry and then put this onto EVE Online too and see, look how things are going. That's not a fair, approach. That's just emotional. That's not intellectual.
Right. I think what he's getting at though is the overall feeling that CCP is like squeezing money out of the most loyal players.
I think they're doing what they can to put things into a 15-year-old game, and they don't have as many options today as they had years ago. They have to kind of think of something and think it all the way through, and what is it going to affect? And they put something in, and different things will, you know, they definitely will get more response if they target something that people have money to spend. You know, if they could put out a new skin for an avatar, or they could put a new skin out for a Tech One frigate, they could charge more for the avatar skin. By the way, I do like the new magma ones. The lava core. Lava core, beautiful.
Do they get money out of you?
and the Nyx police thing, that's cool. We had an old player come back to the game yesterday who hasn't played in a while, and he got in his Nyx, and we showed him that skin, and he flipped and went right to the store and bought it in seconds and was and just was our role-playing a cop, you know, for the next half hour. He loved it. Anyway.
It brings out a really important truth. I think that veteran players, and I could be wrong, aren't really looking for more power. That climb is kind of for the mid-level people. I think at a certain point, you're like, well, it's really about vanity items and stuff like that than it is about actual power. Am I wrong? I think you can get enough in EVE. At a certain point, you have enough ISK. And then it just becomes about vanity items, like I'll get a Vendetta instead of a regular mothership, or I'll, a super carrier, I still call them motherships, or I'll get, you know, skins for my Titans, or, you know, like at a certain point it becomes more vanity items. That's where the money goes for.
And that number is different for different people as well. Like I was hanging out with the role play group on Friday as the big fight was going on, and someone was there from Goonswarm, and they were talking about how much they make per tick and yada yada, and just being very happy because it was like the first time they were seeing that big income, because they'd been living in different areas before.
In squalor
then,
before.
Yeah, basically. And then the other person was like, well, I don't make anywhere near that, but I'm way more rich because all I buy is Punishers, and I can buy literally with what I make doing stuff in Lozek, I can buy like 300 of these a month, and that's all I fly, and it's really fun for me. And like, I don't care about flying a super and ratting and stuff like that. My goal is to fly a Punisher and have fun.
So I don't know. I think the point is, like, when you get to wealth is totally different for different people in the game, depending on how you spend it. Like, if you're only buying prestige ships, like tournament ships, then, you know, you probably need to have a lot of money to do that. So I don't know. I think it's very relative. And I think also veteran players aren't a uniform group either. Some of them are incredibly rich. Some of them give a lot of money away. Some of them haven't developed the means, or don't care to develop the means of ISK production in the game to get a bunch of wealth in the game. Some of them just spend money because that's what they always do anyway. So I don't know. But the one thing that about that video is, I think it's very smart. I think the guy put together a lot of neat research. It's certainly interesting to watch the video. But I do feel like there's a lot of like assumptions made. And the first assumption comes right off the bat, that players want to win. He calls it pay for convenience, right? So you can pay for Plex, and Plex gives you ISK, and ISK gives you the advancement that you want. But all of it seems to be based on being a PvPer. And I just stop right there. Like, that's, you already lost me, because not everybody who plays this game wants to be a great PvPer. In fact, I think there's a huge population that's really into exploration, into living in a virtual social society. There's people that like mining because they like counting money. You know, it's different people are attracted to the game for different reasons. And as Fozzie says, it's not one game, it's about 30 games all in one place.
So, yeah, and the longer you play, then the more people you meet. Like if you go to like events like eVegas and FanFest and all that, you will eventually completely change your view of EVE Online and how it's played. Like I could not believe after my first few events how many people don't interact with NullSec politics at all. Like when I first started playing, that's what I got into. That's where, you know, as I was a younger EVE pilot, I was like, okay, so everyone does this. Everyone's interested by the goings on in NullSec. And I go to FanFest for the first time and a whole bunch of people are just talking about how they're excited about the exploration changes that were being announced there and all this. I was like, hey, what do you guys do? And like so many of the people were just in different spheres of influence than me. And it was incredibly eye-opening. And that's part of the reason why I kept going to these EVE events is just to learn about different EVE players. And you would be surprised at how many people do not give a shit about their kill board efficiency or PvP in general, or maybe they every once in a while they go on like a Bjornby fleet or some public fleet like that to get their PvP shakes out. Then they just go back to business as usual.
So did you walk into a room and say, hey, I'm Elise Randolph?
I was still a nobody then, so nobody really cared, but I was like, I was interested in like all the PvP like roundtables and stuff. And the Alliance News roundtables, and I was running for the CSM at the time, and I was pretty much convinced that I was robbed because I had run for the CSM previously and lost. I was like, "But I'm a better PvPer than the people that won. How could this be true? How could I have lost? It's unfair. I was robbed." And then I got a better appreciation for the game as a whole.
There are people who are in our show audience right now listening to this or watching this who don't care at all about NullSec. Doesn't mean anything to them. They play a different EVE, but they still enjoy the show and talking about EVE and want to hear the guests thing. And they probably think that the Russian propaganda memes would be very interesting to see.
That's one of the I've put like as I got more into FCing, one of the things that I did to give myself a bit of an advantage is I put spies in a bunch of different groups, right? And one of the funniest things is the Alliance chat or the Corp chat or the Discord chat and all these industrial groups, they care about the NullSec politics, but they don't care to get involved in it. But it's like they pick a sports team, so some of them have literally no interaction with the Imperium at all, and they're all pro-goon. Like anything that you say, they will just say, well, goons are the best, blah, 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 blah. And then there are people that have no interaction with Pandemic Legion or the Pandemic family, I guess. And they are devout fans of NCDOT and Pandemic Legion. They're like, oh, these guys are saving the game from those evil goons. Like they literally will never go out into NullSec. They'll have no interaction, but they do have like little fan favorites.
They pick teams. I like it. It's like sports. And I'll tell you what, I think, in my opinion, that reputation is built on a very careful exposure to medias or whatever, or even in-game stuff. Reddit's a big place where reputations are hit or augmented quite a bit. But the point is, there's definitely like damage that you can do to a reputation for those groups over time. And you'll end up stopping to cheer for them. So there's a ton of psychological warfare between these teams constantly, played out through the media in places like this and other places. What do you think INN is all about? Like, and it's no secret because TMC was about the same thing early on, which is, and every once in a while, in the most hilarious way, Mitani would joke about that, but it's like his defense against bad media. But it's also his weapon and for media use as well. And that's psychological warfare in the game. That's the meta. The game is the game, but the meta is the curving of reputations and diminishing and augmenting of, respect and stuff like that. It's all about recruitment and numbers and keeping people interested and that kind of stuff. Whoa, I think I just slipped into like a deep end. I don't know what happened there, but we should wrap up the show. And what we'll do today is something a little different. We haven't done this before, but we're having such a great time talking. We're going to do the after show and stay on the air. We'll break for a minute and then we'll start the stream again. And maybe we'll go for like a half hour or an hour, but you're all welcome to join us. We all pile into the public channel for TIS. Yes, we're going to do this on air. And we don't take questions. We just kind of hang out. You know, it becomes a big discussion. And people who are in the audience get a chance to tell us after a show normally what they think about certain topics. And then we learn a lot after the shows. But this time we're actually going to stream it since we're having a good time. So we will do that in just a second.
Yeah. If you're listening and you're not in our Discord, look at the talk, or if you're watching the stream, scroll down a little bit on the webpage in Twitch, and you'll see a Discord link that you can click to join. You could join right now, and you'll be able to go into the public channel. If you look right now, you'll see Dunk Dinkle's already in there ready. Yay, Dunk. We'll go join him as soon as the show's over.
So good. Thanks for pointing that out. It's always there. So get to Discord, get to the public channel. It's always open, always free. You can hang out there whether we're there or not. It's really a place to discuss ideas about EVE Online. Oh my gosh, what a long show. We didn't know that we were going to go this long. We thought we only had an hour. But again, you can come hang out and lurk, or come in out, give your feedback, give your questions, and we'll talk about EVE Online for an additional hour after the show. Last thing I want to say is I'm starting to stream a bit more in the mornings, which is kind of cool. So if you want to join me, I don't know what time it is, EVE Online time. So I'll just say it is around 8 to 9 a.m. Pacific time during the weekday. I just light up for an hour to try to do a little streaming with some friends. And we'll just look at the economy, and we look at the news and stuff like that. And I want to do more of that kind of stuff, as well as behind the scenes talking in stations where we edit shows and make artwork. And you can watch how we do that live. We're going to be doing that quite a bit, and it'll always be posted in Talking in Stations public. We'll ping when we do it. So join us. We're going to open up a bit more the Talking in Stations family to you guys, because we're all kind of in the same family. Okay, that brings us to the end of Talking in Stations this Sunday. I want to thank Carneros and Elise, and of course Seth, who stayed with us. I think he's asleep though.
Nope.
I'm sorry you had to sit here with us the whole time, but we love having you here. It's a great perspective.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Also, I wish some luck for this Russian allies who are going to attack China. There should be a lot of content really, so good luck for them.
Awesome. Elise, Carnero, Seth, thank you guys very much. McLeod, as always, thanks for putting the show together. We will see you guys in public. We'll be back right after this break.